Could you please read the first item?
Item 347, proclaim April 2018 to be Fair Housing Month.
Colleagues, 50 years ago, the 1968 Civil Rights Act, commonly known as the Fair Housing Act of 1968, was signed into law. This monumental legislation prohibited housing discrimination based on race, color, or national origin. Draped in the backdrop of the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., this legislation was part of a suite of legislation that was attached to a broader civil rights movement to address the inequities that many Americans faced. This focus on fair housing is especially important as we've seen a national dialogue aimed at weakening the protections that many have counted on to increase housing opportunities in America, which is why I am very proud that we as a city are gathered here today to proclaim April Fair Housing Month. We recognize the profound importance of this legislation and how this blueprint legislation serves as a guide and as a model as we advance towards our collective future. It's our responsibility to create a forum for the voices of those who have the least access to power, to those who are the most impacted by the limitations of our society. And I'm happy that we're spending sufficient time hearing how this law has impacted their opportunities and the efforts we've enacted and those we must maintain to have a truly functioning and equitable Portland. So today I'm proud to share the Fair Housing Proclamation, to hear the history of the Fair Housing Act, to engage with the various speakers this afternoon, and to honor the history and the future of this legislation. It's now my honor to read the proclamation. Whereas the Fair Housing Act, enacted on April 11, 1968, was adopted to prohibit discriminatory housing practices, undue racial segregation patterns, and provide equal access to housing opportunity for all. And whereas in Portland, the combined federal, state, and civil rights laws protect people from housing discrimination based on race, color, national origin, religion, gender, familial status, disability, marital status, sexual orientation, source of income, including housing assistance, military status, gender identity, ethnicity, or history of domestic violence, stalking, or sexual assault. And whereas, despite these legal protections, Portland has not yet succeeded in providing equitable access to opportunity or removing the patterns of racial segregation that persist in housing, employment, education, and all other institutions. And whereas Executive Order 12892 calls on government to affirmatively further fair housing by addressing and removing barriers to housing choice in all federal programs, policies, plans, resources, and activities. And whereas the City of Portland is a recipient of federal funding, extends to all of its bureaus the obligation to understand which communities experience barriers to housing choice and why, dedicate resources to meaningfully addressing those disparities, and measure the impacts of these actions to all of its bureaus. And whereas April 11th, 2018 marks the 50th anniversary of the signing of Title VIII of the Federal Civil Rights Act, the Federal Fair Housing Act of 1968, and the 30th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act amendments of 1988. Now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim April 2018 to be Fair Housing Month in the City of Portland and encourage all residents to observe this month. Colleagues, I've been informed that Commissioner Fish, who has a long history in housing and fair housing in particular, has some words to add. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you very much, Mayor, and welcome everybody to this gathering. As the Mayor noted in his remarks, the 1960s produced three great civil rights laws: the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and the Fair Housing Act of 1968. The Fair Housing Act addressed the legacy of discrimination in housing. It focused on explicit discrimination, like redlining and federal mortgage insurance, and restrictive covenants in real estate contracts. But it also addressed more subtle forms of discrimination, like real estate agents steering minorities to particular neighborhoods, biased lending and underwriting, and concentrating poverty in certain zip codes. The Fair Housing Act was blocked and filibustered for many years. Dr. King's assassination on April 4, 1968, proved decisive and forced action by the Congress. Now, the Fair Housing Act had champions from both parties. Remember those days? Its main goal was integrating neighborhoods and ending bias. But the original act proved to be a toothless tiger. It took the Fair Housing Act amendments of 1988 to strengthen the law and to expand its reach. The amendments prohibited discrimination based on familial status and disability, established new administrative enforcement mechanisms, and expanded the jurisdiction of the Justice Department to sue on behalf of victims in federal court. My father played a key role in brokering the compromise that allowed the amendments to become law. When President Reagan signed the bill into law at a White House ceremony on September 13, 1988, he gave my dad one of the pens that he used. I brought the pen with me today. Despite the laudable intentions of the Fair Housing Act, enforcement has been slow and uneven. Recently, the Trump administration put the brakes on a 2015 executive rule that requires recipients of federal housing dollars, as the mayor indicated, to affirmatively further fair housing. HUD Secretary Dr. Ben Carson went one step further, dismissing the rule as, quote, social engineering. Mayor and colleagues, I am so proud that we are taking the time today to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act. While we have made progress as a country, there is more work to be done to reach our shared goal of a fairer, more integrated nation. Now, Mayor, you're going to issue the proclamation, and it is your tradition to sign it. I wonder if you could, in a ceremonial way, sign the proclamation with the pen used by President Reagan. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I'll be checking eBay tonight. Thank you, Mayor.
There it is, folks. Folks, we have now Jason Trombley to make remarks on behalf of the Fair Housing Advisory Commission.
Mayor, Commissioners, I wanted to introduce Jason Trombley. He has been our chair of the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee since 2014. Jason has been
Could you introduce yourself?
I'm sorry, Shannon Callahan of the Portland Housing Bureau. Jason is a public relations professional and education advocate who has represented the Coalition of Communities of Color on the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee, and we are grateful for his guidance and his leadership. In his capacity with the Coalition of Communities of Color, he has helped develop strategic plans around economic development and education. In addition to his work on the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee, he has staunchly supported Portland Public Schools' racial equity work, including the Achievement Compact Advisory Committee, the Superintendent's Advisory Committee on Enrollment and Transfer, And most recently, he led the commission to address school boundary changes, program locations, and grade configuration changes for Portland Public. Outside of all of this, he is also the coach and has been for 12 years of the six-time national champion Lincoln High School Constitution team. And he is a board chair of Mission Citizen, the nonprofit funded and managed by his own students, which helps to work with immigrants in Washington and Multnomah counties to become U.S. citizens. So he does a lot, and he does a lot for the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee, and we wanted to acknowledge and thank him for that today. So it is my privilege to introduce Jason.
Thank you, Shannon. Good afternoon, all.
Good afternoon.
Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, as today marks the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Fair Housing Act, I'm here to help share how the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee, or FHAC, helps to play a role in applying the act in the region. As part of the analysis of impediments to fair housing, or AI report, required by HUD, or also known as the City of Portland, Gresham, and Multnomah County 2011 Fair Housing Plan, an analysis of impediments to fair housing choice and the strategies to address them, or also known as the Fair Housing Plan, the City of Portland, on behalf of its jurisdictional partners, was tasked with collecting and analyzing data that identifies barriers to housing choice and with developing a report that outlines strategies to mitigate the identified barriers. In order to bring knowledgeable community voices into the preparation of the report, Portland and its consortium partners, Multnomah County, the City of Portland, and the City of Gresham, convened the Analysis of Impediments Committee, or AI Committee, to recommend and review research data and make recommendations on strategies to remove barriers to housing choice. The resulting Fair Housing Plan identified a number of key barriers to exercising housing choice, including a general lack of understanding by housing consumers and housing providers of fair housing law, as well as the need for a clear, focused fair housing champion. In response, the AI committee suggested creating a Fair Housing Advocacy Committee that meets at least quarterly to focus on the implementation of fair housing strategies and to be a strong advocate voice in Multnomah County. The purpose of the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee, as recommended in the Fair Housing Plan, is to provide a strong advocate voice in Multnomah County for the implementation and recommendations in the plan. FHAC will also work to hold its jurisdictional partners of Multnomah County accountable for their actions under the plan. And FHAC looks forward to also supporting the work under the next assessment of fair housing in advance of the next five-year consolidated plan. So that's just a short overview of the role of FHAC and its work over the past several years. And to kind of share some broader context, I'd like to invite some of our community partners who've been a part of this work since its beginning. So first up, I'd like to invite Alan Lazo, who is the Executive Director of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, Christina Dirks, Attorney for Legal Aid Services of Oregon, and Matt Saris from Disability Rights Oregon.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. Let me get my stuff out here. All right, so I'm going to back up a little bit and talk about the history of the Fair Housing Act and the times in which that was passed. So good afternoon, Mayor, members of the City Council. It truly is wonderful for me to be here with you this afternoon, and I was with some of you earlier this morning. You know, this is one of my favorite days to come to Council and bring these young student artists with us, so we're going to get to that a little bit later. But really, we're here to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Federal Fair Housing Act, that landmark civil rights legislation intent on ending deeply rooted racial discrimination and segregation. Riots in more than 150 cities across the country during that long, hot summer of 1967 prompted President Lyndon Johnson to convene the Kerner Commission later that year. The commission famously concluded at that time, quote, "Our nation is moving toward two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal." The commission's views on housing followed the lead of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who gave rise to the open housing movement with his work in Chicago a year earlier. The Kerner Commission went on to call for opening up opportunities to those who are restricted by racial segregation and discrimination and eliminating all barriers to their choice of jobs, education, and housing. The commission recommended that the federal government enact a comprehensive and enforceable federal open housing law to cover the sale or rental of all housing. The Fair Housing Act, which had been the last major civil rights legislation to pass, became that comprehensive and enforceable federal open housing law on April 11th, 1968, a week after Dr. King's assassination. This original act prohibited discrimination in the sale or rental of housing on the basis of race, color, religion, and national origin, and as we heard earlier, sex, meaning gender, was added as a protected class in 1974, and disability and familial status, meaning families with children under the age of 18, were added in 1988. Despite the civil rights progress over the past 50 years that have led to gains in educational attainment among other areas, there remains a persistent lack of progress on many of the issues that prompted the creation of the original Fair Housing Act. A 2015 study published in the American Sociological Review indicated that, quote, segregation is manifesting itself in other ways, not disappearing. The study notes that while black-white segregation is declining and areas no longer are divided into black cities and white suburbs, segregation between places, for instance, between city and suburb and suburb and suburb, may be increasing, even as overall metro neighborhood segregation declines. We know that here in Portland, that displacement out of the core of our city due to housing affordability continues to deny opportunities for communities of color, single mother-headed households, and people with disabilities, denying these groups the opportunity to fully realize all of the benefits of our community. The home ownership rate for blacks has remained virtually unchanged since 1968, at approximately 40%, 30 points lower than it is for whites today. And that holds true right here in Portland. According to the Portland Housing Bureau's 2016 State of Housing Report, white households are roughly 54 to 57% homeowners, while African Americans, Native Americans, and Hawaiian Pacific Islander households own homes at a rate of roughly 27%. 50 years after the passage of the Fair Housing Act, we must acknowledge the persistent impacts of historical housing discrimination and segregation right here in Portland. 50 years after the passage of the Fair Housing Act, our work in the fair housing movement is far from done. In preparing for the 50th anniversary, I've done a lot of research in preparing for this momentous commemoration. And there's been this almost universal theme in headlines around coverage of the 50th anniversary. I'm talking about the unfulfilled promise or the failure of the Fair Housing Act. Former Vice President Walter Mondale, co-author of the 1968 Act, called the Fair Housing Act, quote, the most contested, most ignored, and at times most misunderstood of the civil rights laws of that era. So this is a time more than ever when we must recommit to the ideals of the fair housing movement, the ideal of open and inclusive communities. We all have a great deal at stake. The future of our community is literally at stake in this work that we all do together. We know that integrated and inclusive communities produce better outcomes for our children and are more prosperous overall. Commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act reminds us that we have a history that divides us. But it must be our shared commitment to Dr. King's dream of creating a community open and inclusive to all that unites us. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for providing us the opportunity to celebrate and reflect on the importance of the Fair Housing Act. My name is Christina Dirks. I'm an attorney with Legal Aid Services of Oregon. Within the last 50 years, we have most definitely seen how discriminatory housing practices have changed and evolved with the times. We continue to see blatant forms of discrimination. However, we more frequently see subtle and equally pernicious discrimination. It's our duty to be responsive to these changes and challenge ourselves to think creatively about how we enforce these laws. In an effort to highlight some of the fair housing trends that we are seeing at Legal Aid Services, I thought I would highlight a few of our recent cases. One trend we are seeing is the intersectional forms of discrimination that tenants face when they are members of multiple protected classes. An example is that Lasso recently successfully settled a claim of a tenant with a Section 8 voucher who was discriminated against when she was applying for housing. While viewing an apartment, the manager both subtly and overtly discouraged her from applying based on the tenant's race. When the manager later learned that the client had a Section 8 voucher, The manager proceeded to make disparaging comments about Section 8 voucher holders and flatly rejected the tenant's application. Another issue we are seeing is how members of protected classes are subjected to substandard housing. Lassa recently represented a family of color who utilized a Section 8 voucher as well. The family suffered repeated substantial habitability violations and source of income discrimination from the on-site manager in the form of delayed responses to repair requests and retaliation for refusing to lie about the condition of the apartment to the inspector from the housing authority. Yet another trend is housing providers' failure to address tenant-on-tenant discriminatory harassment. We're currently representing a tenant who was subjected to ongoing racial and gender-based harassment from her neighbor. Her landlord did nothing to resolve the issue and, in fact, went so far as to accuse our neighbor of being racist for complaining about the neighbor's racist harassment. An additional trend is housing providers granting reasonable accommodations in name only but not in substance. We are repeatedly seeing in the eviction context that unrepresented tenants are being told their reasonable accommodation request is being granted. However, they are still being forced to enter into agreements where they are required to move and vacate from their unit. One case came to us after the tenant failed to move out under the terms of an agreement. He had made a request for a reasonable accommodation to stay in his housing in order to obtain treatment and maintain housing. The landlord said they were granting the request and would give him 2 additional weeks to move. We were able to immediately file a request for a hearing, get back into court, and negotiate a new agreement that allowed the tenant to stay in their housing and obtain the vital treatment they needed in order to maintain their sobriety. Finally, I would be remiss if I did not underline how the housing crisis today in Portland is the most pressing fair housing issue that we face. Through numerous cases that Lassa has handled representing large number of tenants in building-wide displacements or exorbitant rent increases, we have seen how the housing crisis is resulting in the wholesale displacement of communities of color. Through these cases, we have also seen how the housing crisis is reinforcing familiar patterns of housing segregation. In addition, landlords are utilizing more stringent screening criteria that make it nearly impossible for communities of color and individuals with disabilities to live anywhere in our city. This is an area ripe for disparate impact litigation. The obligation of the Fair Housing Act command that equity and fair housing be at the center of any analysis of policy initiatives aimed at addressing the housing crisis. We owe this to every member of our protected classes in our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mayor, commissioners, thank you for inviting this testimony today. As we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act, for persons with disabilities, it is the 30th anniversary of fair housing. Congress expanded the Fair Housing Act to protect people with disabilities in 1988. Today in the U.S., nearly 20% of people live with a disability. Today, over half of all fair housing complaints involve disability discrimination. As a housing attorney at Disability Rights Oregon, I see the positive impact that the Fair Housing Act has on Oregonians with disabilities. Reasonable accommodations under the Fair Housing Act empower persons with disabilities to access our community and all its opportunities. The Fair Housing Act is for veterans returning home with mental or physical wounds, that they may have a companion animal to provide emotional support or a service animal to perform tasks of daily living. The Fair Housing Act is for tenants in public housing who need a live-in caregiver, that they may reside with their caregiver despite the restrictions in public housing. The Fair Housing Act is for elders with crippling arthritis who face challenges moving safely within their homes, that they may install the assistive devices necessary to avoid injuries and maintain independence. It is for the family whose child manifests an emerging emotional or behavioral disorder that they do not live in fear of eviction due to their child's behaviors as they develop a plan to manage those symptoms. It is for the person with lung disease or using a wheelchair whose journey from the front door to their car has become a barrier to leaving home, that they may have access to ramps, curb cuts, and designated parking spots necessary to participate in community life. It is for the person with the disability living in poverty who relies on the Section 8 voucher, but for whom it is hard to find affordable, accessible housing, that they may have extra time to find a home before their voucher expires. The Fair Housing Act is for leaders of government, that they use it as a touchstone to guide housing policies that provide greater equity and inclusion. In 1988, the Fair Housing Act was expanded to include persons with disabilities. As we consider the future, let us imagine the ways we can extend its principles to help more people and tackle new challenges. Challenges like how to develop the Broadway Corridor Project, how to balance landlord and tenant rights, how to step up local enforcement efforts to stop discrimination and tear down barriers to accessibility. In responding to those challenges, let us listen to the disabled community. Disability touches everyone. It is a status that any of us may come to share. It can arise unexpectedly in our lives or in the lives of those we love. No matter what life has in store for us, the protections of the Fair Housing Act are for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. And Matt, just for the record, that was such great testimony. Could you say your name and your position for the record?
Yes. My name is Matthew Sears. I'm from Disability Rights Oregon, and I'm a housing attorney.
Thank you, all of you. I appreciate it very much.
All right. So I'd like to invite to the dais our next three presenters, Young Ho from the Community Alliance of Tenants, Sumitra Chetri, who is the Community Engagement Program Coordinator with ERCO's Asian Family Center, and Dolores Burgos from NIA.
Good afternoon. Welcome, and thank you for being here.
Hello. Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Jung, and I am the Education Program Director at Community Alliance of Tenants. Thank you so much for having us all here today to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Fair Housing Act, and we are excited to celebrate it through the month of April as well. I have been at CAT for over 8 years, and in that time, I have spoken with many tenants who have been mistreated. We work with and advocate for the most vulnerable members of the community, low-income tenants, immigrants, and refugees, people with disabilities, and families. Many of these people are part of the protected classes under the Fair Housing Council, the Fair Housing Act. Every week, our Renters Rights Hotline Specialists counsel tenants whose rights have been violated under the Fair Housing Act. And we refer them to the Fair Housing Council, as well as many of the resources from people who have just spoken today. Through the Tenant Protections Team Program, which is a partnership with culturally specific organizations, ERCO, SEI, and APANO, our education coordinators work with tenants one-on-one to help them advocate for their rights and amplify their often silenced voices. These tenants often struggle to find and keep affordable housing, facing housing discrimination against families and recent immigrants. My colleague at Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, Sumitra, will be sharing a story from her community. The tenant story is one small victory among many tenant stories that are not successful because the others were not able to understand how to find resources. They felt fearful of retaliation and couldn't risk losing their home. Their family was able to connect to our resources and services and learn and assert their rights with our support. With our help, the family has been able to share their story, and in turn, they have encouraged other Bhutanese community members to speak up and about their housing situation, the discrimination and intimidation. And with that, I welcome Sumitra from ERCO to share Ganesh's story.
Thank you.
Hello, this is for the record. My name is Sumitra. I'm a program coordinator with ERCO. I'm glad to be here sharing a happy story today. One of the clients that is from Bhutanese community, his name is Ganesh, and he's the head of household. He works, two jobs to just put food in the table. And Ganesh's family came to United States as a Bhutanese refugee immigrant, and Ganesh's family lived in an apartment for several years and they moved to different apartment. After moving to new apartment, Ganesh got a letter from previous apartment manager saying that Ganesh will not be getting his deposit back, and Ganesh will have to pay more money, and if not, the manager will report to the credit. Because of limited English, Ganesh did not understand what was in the letter. Ganesh was able to connect with CAT service by IRCO case manager and able to get support from CAT service. Daisy, CAT housing program coordinator, supported Ganesh to write a letter to the manager, also filed a claim. Ganesh was able to get his deposit back, and his credit is good now. Ganesh was, you know, now encouraged to share his story to other community members, and they're encouraged to speak up when things like that happen in the community.
Thank you. That is a positive story, and thank you for your great work on that.
Very positive story.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Dolores Burgos. I am from the Native American Youth and Family Center. I am the Housing and Energy Services Program Manager. And I just wanted to touch on some of the community's issues about discrimination as far as housing goes. The current fair housing laws are indeed fair, but neither equitable nor exclusive. Current fair housing laws conform to a faulty standard, which assumes that all ethnicities and classes are given the exact same opportunities and have gone through life with the same privileges. One of the communities which have the communities of colors have endured the steepest levels of housing discriminations. Our community has faced not only housing discrimination itself, but has endured weighted scales which bar the community from many programs which seek to specifically address housing barriers and permanent placement. Current tools for assessing housing support eligibility are ineffective and are not culturally responsive. Screening questions are worded in language from a white business perspective and impose inherent value judgments in the way they are asked. Programs require their participants to meet the federal definition of homelessness, thus bearing Native community members to do communal culture where community members may be doubled up with friends or family. Indeed, it has been observed that an information management database reports show that the community-wide effort to fight homelessness simply does not know much about the Native American community. Assessment tools give a profound lack of regard for any community member's specific tribe, and HUD has grouped the community together as all Native American, American Indian, and Alaska Natives. There is no regard for those who are enrolled in a tribe, as well as whether or not a tribe is federally recognized. The Native American community faces discrimination not in merely gaining access to supportive housing services, but also from landlords and property managers. Native clients whom NAYA serves have disclosed potential landlords frequently asking about their Indian last name as one of their first questions. This question would be not asked by somebody with the last name of Smith or Johnson. Native community members face challenges such as these, as well as unwarranted assumptions from landlords of loud partying habits and frequent foot traffic. These faulty assumptions from a white nationalist perspective are not acceptable and do not address the fact that our community is becoming more and more diverse and is becoming more exclusive than the white standards previously set by landlords and rental application screening criteria. Factors as this, when combined with hoops community members must jump through in order to receive support and get approved for rental units, are neither equitable nor inclusive. These discriminatory practices only further the gap between communities of color and white Americans. Though the laws in the place are currently fair, fairness assumes that every single person already comes to the table with the same amount of support systems, financial security, and opportunities. These laws are not inclusive of our ever-changing community and do not prevent landlords from practicing their biases against the Native community. And on that note, we are very, very proud that we have come this far as fair housing. I know that we need to do a lot more work. And I'm just overwhelmed. I'm sorry. And we appreciate the city's help, the state's help, partner agencies in fighting the fight so that we could all be just treated as equal. Thanks.
Thank you. We appreciate your great work. Thank you for being here.
All right, next up we have Patricia Rojas, who is the director of El Programa Hispano, and she has a few guests you'd like to bring up as well.
Counselors, thanks so much for making the time to have this important beginning of an important conversation remembering 1968 Fair Housing Act. My name is Patricia Rojas, for the record, Executive Director of El Programa Hispano Católico. And even though the Fair Housing Act clearly stated what the ambitions were, what the laws should be, we have a long way to go towards implementing those laws equitably and across the board, across communities in this country. And one of the things that we continue to see in our community is discrimination in housing based on race, ethnicity, nationality, and even language. And I, as executive director, I can speak with you at any time. I think I feel comfortable reaching out to you and speaking with you more and personally about what we can do about that. I do feel like we need to have regulatory bodies and mechanisms to hold landlords accountable. But I think it's more important that today you hear examples of what we're seeing in our community every day. So we have invited some guests to come share their experiences, and I want to first of all thank them for being here. There was no interpreter present today, so I'm going to interpret for them, but next time we should have interpreters present so that all community members can participate in important events like this.
Agreed. Thank you.
Okay. ¿Quién quiere hablar primero? Okay, puede traer el micrófono. Y acuérdate de hablar frases cortas. Y puede empezar con su nombre.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon.
Mi nombre es Zaida.
My name is Zaida.
Villaturo.
Villaturo.
Hace unos años yo vivía, o vivo en Portland. Vivía en unos apartamentos y luego yo fui a Tillamook.
So I've been living in Portland for a few years in some apartments, and then after that I went to Tillamook.
Cuando yo regresé, la manager me dice, ya no puedes estar en la aplicación, te voy a quitar.
So when I came back, the manager told me, you can no longer be on the lease, I'm going to remove you.
Y le digo, ¿por qué? Si el apartamento se está pagando. Y dice, no importa.
And I asked why. I'm paying my rent. She says, it doesn't matter.
Entonces yo fui a otro lugar y se quedó otro mi compañero rentando.
And so I then went to a different place, and a friend of mine remained renting.
Yo quería regresar, y él fue a decirle que yo iba a regresar.
And so I wanted to return, and he went to tell her that I wanted to return.
Y cuando él le fue a decir, ella le dijo, si regresas, te voy a sacar también a ti.
And so when he did, she told him, if she comes back, then I'm gonna have you leave as well. So her friend now, two people facing potential displacement.
Hay muchas personas en esos apartamentos que sufren mucho racismo por ella.
There are a lot of people in that apartment complex that suffer racism because of that person.
Actualmente también estoy viviendo en cerca. Y la manager no me quiere dar parqueadero.
And now I'm living at another apartment complex nearby, and the manager doesn't want to give me a parking spot.
Que tenemos que tener licencia para que me dé el parqueadero.
Because I have to have a driver's license to have a parking spot.
También le regalaron un perrito a mi hijo, y me dijo que tenía que tener la licencia.
And I need to clarify. ¿Licencia de qué?
Del perro. También.
Oh, okay. And so my son was given a puppy, and the manager said I needed to have a license to be a pet owner or a license for that as well.
Empezamos a buscar dónde daban la licencia y yo le fui y le dije que estoy en proceso de buscar la licencia. Y ella me dijo que no, me fue a dejar un papel que el 17 yo tenía que desocupar porque no tenía la licencia del perro.
And so I told her that I was out looking for where I could find this license, and she said, no, you're going to be evicted on the 17th.
Tuvimos que regresar el perro donde no lo regalaron.
And so we gave the dog back. That is all.
Sorry to hear that. Thank you for sharing your story. Gracias.
Gracias por compartir su historia.
De nada.
¿Puede traer el micrófono y se puede presentar empezando con su nombre, por favor?
Sí. Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Lorena Galindo y soy beneficiada del programa hispano.
So, good afternoon, my name is Lorena Galindo and I'm a client of el programa hispano.
Llegué a la ciudad de Portland hace más o menos año y medio.
I came to Portland about a year and a half ago.
Entonces quiero hablar de las dificultades que fueron bastantes con las que me enfrenté durante el proceso en la búsqueda de vivienda.
So I'd like to speak to the challenges that I have faced in terms of finding housing.
La primera barrera que se me presentó en ese proceso fue cuando yo llegaba a llenar una aplicación. Entonces, el primer requisito es un número de seguro social. Sin saber exactamente qué restricciones tenían, yo llenaba la aplicación. La entregué en dos ocasiones, entonces me la regresaron y me dijeron que no podía procesarse porque simplemente no cumplía con el requisito.
So the first barrier that I faced was in simply applying. And without knowing, I applied and they had a requirement that you have to provide a social security number. And I didn't know and I filled out two different applications and both were declined or denied because I didn't have a social security number and I did not know that this was part of the process.
Sabía que era difícil porque no soy la única persona que le había sucedido, entonces aún así pues tenía la necesidad de encontrar un lugar donde vivir, así que un conocido de un familiar me recomendó con alguien que tenía apartamentos, que era igual que yo, hispano. El señor me dio la oportunidad, llené la aplicación, sabía que yo no hablaba inglés, que yo no tenía el seguro social. Sin embargo, me dio la oportunidad.
Un momento, señora, déjeme interpretar esa parte. Perdón que le interrumpa.
I needed to find housing nonetheless. And so I spoke with a friend of mine who knew a landlord, and I went ahead and applied, and he knew that I didn't speak English and that I didn't have the documentation.
A los dos días más o menos de que me había confirmado que yo podía rentar, me dijo siempre no, porque hay una persona que sí tiene los requisitos, entonces vas a esperar. Si hay un lugar, un espacio para ti, bueno, y si no, lo siento.
And then they called me a couple of days later saying, yes, we accept your application. However, we're going to make you wait because there is somebody else that does have all of their documentation and we'll call you if something opens up.
Y pues, de mi parte es todo. Mi testimonio nada más es para hablar de lo que pasa realmente y no de lo que dice la ley como debería ser. Gracias.
That is all. I wanted to share my testimony about what really happens and not what the law says. Thank you.
Gracias.
Gracias. Hi, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Yadira, and I'm here today because I want to tell you about my rental history, not only here in Multnomah County, but also in Marion County. I have a disabled daughter, and at that time I was pregnant, so I couldn't work. We needed a place to live, and we couldn't find one here, so we went to Marion, and they told us that they wouldn't rent to us because I wasn't working in the agricultural work, but my husband was, and he's undocumented, so they wouldn't give us our apartment. I had to go through a lot of processes and doctor's notes for them to give us that apartment. They kicked us out because I wasn't able to, you know, find a work in the agricultural because my daughter has heart issues and brain conditions. So they kicked us out. We came over here to Multnomah County trying to find a place to rent for my daughters and for ourselves. And we encountered a very racist manager. She called my husband illegal. She screamed and cussed at me. And it's just been a very hard road to find rental assistance that would, or should I say rental apartments, that would accept my husband's status without me being the head of household. And I'm very thankful that you guys had a chance to listen to me.
Thank you. We appreciate your being here to share your story. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just want, while we have a pause, I also want to acknowledge that we have a very esteemed elected official in the room with us today, State Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer. She was here this morning for our Fair Housing Act commemorative breakfast, and she's here this afternoon, and I just wanted to acknowledge her presence. We're glad to have you here. Thank you.
Our next two speakers are Deborah Imzo from Multifamily Northwest and Betty Dominguez of Home Forward. And I know Betty also has a few guest speakers as well. So.
Great.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Deborah Imzo, Executive Vice President for Multifamily Northwest, which is a trade association, and we represent over 200,000 units in the state of Oregon. I've also been a member of the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee since its inception. Several years ago, when Section 8 vouchers were made part of the protected classes for source of income in the state of Oregon, the Myers Memorial Trust awarded Legal Aid, Northwest Public Affairs, and Multifamily Northwest a grant to educate landlords on the changes in the law. Later, when the Supreme Court upheld the concept of disparate impact, the group was awarded a second grant to educate landlords on the concept and the fact that a facially neutral screening policy can have a disproportionate impact on a protected class. Recently, the same group has been awarded a third two-year grant. We will spend the first year researching alternative screening criteria other than criminal and credit. The second year, we will reach out to landlords across the state with the results of our work. I am pleased to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the enactment of the Fair Housing Act by working collaboratively with the housing authorities and Legal Aid to look at screening alternatives that protect the community but are successful in providing housing opportunities for those in our communities with barriers. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. We really appreciate your being here. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners, I'm Betty Dominguez. I'm a director at Home Forward. I've also been a longtime sitting member of the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee, and I'm proud to say a newly appointed Metro Councilor. Before we begin, I did want to just have a personal note. As a Latina woman growing up in the late 50s, early 60s in San Diego, I experienced racial prejudice and name-calling that no child should have to hear. And so this particular event, this 50th anniversary of this act, is very personally significant and special to me. But I'm not here to talk about me. I'm here to introduce you to some very, very special people. Nearly one-third of the U.S. population has a criminal record of some sort. While persons with criminal records are not a protected class under the Act, data shows that criminal history-based barriers to housing have a disproportionately disproportionate impact on persons of color and other marginalized communities, which are protected classes under the Act. Criminal records have a long-term collateral consequence as they create a barrier to access housing as well as education and employment. In 2016, Home Forward and Metropolitan Public Defenders partnered to begin the Record Relief and Expungement Program to increase resident access to legal assistance to alleviate barriers related to past criminal history. In this program, Metropolitan Public Defenders provides free legal assistance to Home Forward residents and participants. Almost 1,000 individuals since the inception of the program have been served, and we're here to introduce two of them to you today. To my we have Sherelle. Sherelle and her three children live in one of Home Forward's public housing communities. She began engaging in the Record Relief and Expungement Partnership 1 year ago when her criminal record from her past was impacting her ability to meet her housing and economic goals. Sherelle, thank you for your time today and your willingness to tell your story.
First, I want to say thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for allowing me to tell my story. My name is Sherelle Rosalie Anderson. I'm a gang outreach worker for the city of Gresham now, but I was a city of Portland. At first, Home Forward denied me. They said because I had a charge from 12 years ago. I have two felonies. I didn't know what I was doing, so I agreed to whatever they had given me. I, at first, was okay, accepted a job, worked 7 years at that job, but then I had my three daughters. Went through DV and still was not getting no help. So I met with the Community Law Division at the Metropolitan and told them my story. I had been the one person who had no charges, no problems, had worked in the community doing what I do, trying to help youth not fall in the same footsteps as me. But I still was facing every barrier as them, like if I had just committed a crime. So working with them, they fought. They got all of my fines dismissed. They have showed me that it's not my past that defines me, but who I am today. So I'm very grateful for them and Home Forward for giving me the opportunity to be able to be here today.
Thank you. And since I believe our paths may have crossed a long time ago, nearly a decade ago, I pushed forward the ban the box strategy of Multnomah County. And I was lucky I had a form of government that's different than here, and I could just sign an executive order, which I did. And the reason I did it was because of our gang outreach workers. I actually wanted people who could go into the community and speak to young people with a degree of experience and personal connection. And so, ironically, I saw them as superior in that role, and I wanted to make sure that we weren't squeezing people out who actually could bring that personal experience and the benefit of hindsight to the role. So I'm really appreciative of your being here today to share the continuation of that story and how it continues to have an impact well beyond your history. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, sir.
So Home Forward went to bat the box many, many years ago as well. And right now in our public housing, we have the ability to house people that have criminal backgrounds, but we wanted to be sure that folks could leave our housing and find housing elsewhere and be able to secure jobs. We're hoping at some point in time we can address reentry housing, second chances across our whole portfolio.
By the way, so, Betty, I just want to say that the city of Portland also has, you know, it did ban the box, but
yes.
We did it the Portland way, which is with 5 votes on the council, not with an executive order.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner. So now it's my pleasure to introduce this handsome gentleman at the end. This is Ethan. Ethan and his teenage daughter received rent assistance through the Housing Choice Voucher Program. He engaged in the Record Relief and Expungement Partnership when his criminal record from his past was impacting his ability to successfully find housing with the voucher, even with the voucher. Ethan, thank you also for your time today and your willingness to tell your story.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners.
Thank you.
My story entails I sit here as a African-American male with disabilities, mental and physical disabilities. So I've seen quite a bit of all these kinds of racisms. But my story ends and it has a happy ending. And so it first started in another county, which I have had an advocate speaking with me and speaking for me. But when it was time for me to show up, they wanted to raise the rent, so I couldn't get the housing. We had an attorney intervene. I ended up getting the housing, which didn't stop them from coming in and doing inspections twice a month. And then so we decided to leave that county. We came here. Home Forward was blessed us enough, me and my child, enough to give us a voucher to find a home. I filed an application with one app. It's one app. And so they gave me a free copy of my background check. And when I looked at my background check, I had a felony in 1997. And so that was over 20 years ago. And it said the sentencing date on it, 2006, 2001, 2011. So a person who is not educated in law would look at it and said, well, he's been in jail, he's been in trouble, he's been to prison, or all these different things. If they didn't know how to read it, they're like, I'm not going to mess with him. So then I applied for an apartment. I was denied because of my background check. Then I applied for another apartment through Home Forward, and I contacted my Home Forward worker, and she told me, she gave me the number to the Multnomah, the Metropolitan Public Defender's Law, Criminal Community Law Division. And so I called them, and the attorney there called the next apartment that I applied for, and they denied me again. And so when she called them, and she explained them that, hey, he doesn't have anything on his record, he fits all your criteria, there's no reason for you to deny him. And they ended up giving me and my daughter the apartment. And my daughter's a straight-A student. She's back.
Right.
You know, she's a brilliant, lovely young lady. And she's back in the school. She's in a high school with her friends. And now she can be able to prosper. And with a person with mental health and physical health disabilities, plus background limitations, that it if it wasn't for Home Forward and the Metropolitan Public Defender's Office, we would be homeless right now. So I want to thank Home Forward and the City Council, and I didn't even know that you guys had a Fair Housing 50th anniversary, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you guys so much.
You know, I think it's pretty clear how the program is benefiting people, but I just wanted to add one last thing. It also helps to reunify families. Frequently, you'll have a parent in a unit with children, and the other parent comes out and has a record, and they cannot live in the same dwelling. So that's a big, huge benefit of this program. And as you said, you know, keeping families and parents and children together is really important. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Councillor Dominguez, yes. I believe you now represent District 2 in Metro. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, say again?
You're the Metro Councillor for District 2.
I am, yes, thank you.
I'm very happy that I'm one of your constituents. Colleagues, I want you to know that I've been serving with Councillor Dominguez on the Metro Policy Advisory Committee, which I think you were on at one time, weren't you?
I was many years ago. Yes,
as a citizen representative.
Well, when I was the citizen rep, I could vote. Now as a councillor, I can't, so...
So I just wanted to thank you publicly for all of your citizen volunteering, and I'm really honored that you're now representing me on the Metro Council. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah, we're delighted. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it very, very much.
And finally today, I'd like to bring back Alan Laza, who's going to talk about the Fair Housing Poster Contest and introduce our poster contest winners.
Right. Here he comes.
All right. Sorry about
Welcome
that.
Welcome back.
Talking to the young folks.
Great.
Well, like I said, this is one of my favorite days to come here and be with all you folks. The day we do the Fair Housing Month proclamation, and then we bring you our poster contest awardees. I'm also going to call up my colleague Ed Washington, who's going to say a few words before, as I also bring up the poster contest winner. So we've got three of our young artists with us here today. So come on up here, Lydia, Kobe, and Misha.
Welcome. Welcome to Portland City Hall. All right.
They are all extraordinarily excited to be here, I think because they got to miss school, but just venturing a guess. Ed, go ahead and